Good afternoon, and the mic is working. So, who is expecting a Hyper-V session? Good room, okay. So, it's on the screen. This is my PowerShell desired state configuration session. Over the last few months, I've been working at a company implementing this. We learned quite a lot in the meanwhile, and this session is all about sharing the things I encountered, and in the hopes that you won't have to encounter them and get headaches each night. So, for the people that don't know me, my name is Jeff Wouters. I'm an MVP in Windows PowerShell since 2 years. I currently work at eVision. It's a software developing company in the Netherlands. They develop software for the oil and gas industry, so nothing to do with IT development. I blog, currently not so much because I'm working on a book and the DSC stuff, resources, quite a lot, but no time for blogging. And I'm the founder of the Dutch PowerShell User Group. So are there any people from the Netherlands in here? Two? Okay. So, during this week, you can find me in 3 sessions and at each party. So, if you have any questions, just ask, and if I have the answer, you'll get it. So, finally, the content. DSC, notes from the field. So, like I said, we implemented this, or we are currently implementing it in our environment. And the idea of desired state configuration is to define the state of a server. This is the state you want the server to be in. Push this configuration file towards the target, and the target will configure itself according to that file. So instead of sending entire packages over the network to the target, you're just sending an XML file. That's it. The target will look at that XML file and will start looking, comparing that XML file to its own configuration. What differs? The first time, of course, that thing is pushed, it will see, oh, just about everything differs, so I have to do quite a lot. But let's say that the policy is for the Telnet client not to be configured in production environments. What you can do is, in this desired state configuration file, you can define that the Telnet client needs to be absent. So, some intern is funny. He logs onto a server, enables the Telnet client, he does his work. DSC comes along and, hey, Telnet client, that's not allowed. Off. That's the main idea about DSC. It's configurable through open technologies, open standards, and very easily. At the end, and this is a slide I added because of the keynote, I'll talk a little bit about what I'm building currently. And for like 70% of the stuff I'm writing, I have permission to share on my blog or on websites. So there will be a lot of content coming from my side. So with DSC, you have design choices. You can either push or pull. Who doesn't know what those methods are with DSC? Either no fingers or my language is terrible, so. Okay, in that case, in the case of a pool server, you've got 2 choices. You can configure a web server or a file server. So either the targets will look at the web server and this is where they will receive their configuration file from, or a file server, file share, with some basic files on there. Both situations can be made high available. Like, how would you make a web server high available? Anybody? Seriously? Nobody? Huh? Okay. Clustering, yeah. Or web farm, yeah. File server. Anybody? Nobody has file servers? Come on. What? Oh, this is, yeah, this is right. So the idea was they currently have technologies like web servers, file servers in place. They have proven methods of making them high available. Why not use that instead of reinventing the wheel all over again? And it's Microsoft, so it hasn't been like they've done that before or something. So that's one choice to make, web or file share. For me, the main choice is network communications. In case of file share, it's you can make it more secure, but in my opinion, and that's personal, it's not really secure. So what I would like is a web server, port 443, SSL, certificates, any form of security you're able to do with a web server, put it on there. And in that case, thus far our internal hacker, we hired a hacker to test our environment, but he wasn't then able to crack it thus far. But that's always with hackers, it's just a matter of time. So, DSE. The sorts of input you can use. Basically, Active Directory, CSV, database, and JSON are the mostly used versions. But basically, it's PowerShell. You can use anything that floats your boat as input. If you would like text files, or some you're able to import from some other source, an HR system, or a SAP, or whatever, fine with us. So you have a DSE configuration, you have a source of input. How do you actually link the source of the input to the configuration? Do you do it hard-coded? Who is for hard-coded? No one? Good audience. So what you can do is use config data. I'll show that in the demo later on, but let's say that you've got a variable called config data. You can use that one, the content of it, as an input for your configuration. There are two choices there. You can either choose to create the config data on the fly, so each time the configuration is being pushed, the configuration data is rebuilt. That's option one. But that's for push mechanisms. For pull mechanisms, that's not very useful. So what we've done is create a file with all the config data in there, one file, and put a versioning system around it. So in our case, it's GitHub. Anybody not familiar with GitHub? No fingers, so okay. It keeps track of the versions. So whenever somebody changes it, they have to check it in. And I can see what has been changed, who did it, and especially that who did it part is very important for me. Who fucked it up? So that's what we've done. And I'm happy with that solution. Because every night I'm running a script that rebuilds the configuration data once a night. That's our choice. What we can also do is do it each hour, 30 minutes, whatever you like. So, fixing cached modules. Whenever a design state configuration, a target has received modules or desired state configuration modules, it caches them. It's by design, it has solid reasons for it to do it, but every now and then there's a configuration problem or something like it, and you want to replace the module, update it, and it doesn't work. So would you go into the file and edit it manually on the target? One target, I could imagine, yeah, but 10,000? Not so much. So this is the nuclear option. If you do this, all other options have failed. What you're basically doing is telling the system, well, you have desired state configuration, but I'm removing all your settings and rebuild the desired state configuration from scratch. All your content, all your modules, resources, everything. It works. It's the, I would say, the ultimate fix, but it's very, aggressive. And yes, I found people that scripted this, and they do it every night. Please don't. Unfortunately, he is not here, but David O'Brien, he was presenting last year. He contacted me with a question about the local configuration manager. That's the workhorse of DSC on the target. So he has written a custom resource. One of the tasks for it is to reboot the system. That's it, reboot. But it doesn't work. So two things. First of all, the local configuration manager has to be able to reboot. You can configure that through DSC. So that's the funny thing. DSC can configure DSC. And there's nothing you need to do to configure it because it's all default built in. So you write a configuration for the local configuration manager and reboot node if required. The default is false. So we have to set it to true. That's step one. Next, in the custom resource, I'll talk more about that tomorrow at 12 o'clock in my session, but a resource consists out of three separate functions. Test target resource, set target resource, and get target resource. And I made a mistake in here. It's not test target resource, but set target resource. That one has to have the global DSC machine status is one. If you configure this, it's telling the system, hey, you need to reboot. That's it. So those two are linked together. If one isn't applied, the other one doesn't work. The local configuration manager has a few other settings that when people change them, it can give you a headache because you're expecting the value to be the default. And if you're not smart enough or stupid enough, actually, but to pick a newly installed system and compare those settings with the machine that's been messed up, you're not going to find it if you don't. So allow module override. It's basically easy implementing new versions of modules. If you have a new version and you deploy it to all your targets, and this setting is set to false, good luck deploying, won't work. Certificate ID, I found, has a very cool feature in there. You can provide a path to a certificate in the config data. Normally, you provide a thumbprint signature, not the entire certificate. So with certificate ID, you can provide a path to the certificate. One disadvantage, the system accounts of all those systems connecting to that certificate have to have access to that certificate. The system accounts, not the users. So who is thinking, oh, that's easy, all domain computers, done. Nobody? It's an option, but it also means all domain computers means also desktops. So users would be able to get that certificate their hands on. And if our hacker would find out he could do that, he would be very happy. And I'm not.
Does the certificate have to have the private key?
Does the certificate have to have the private key? No, I believe not. But still, anything a hacker can get his hands on is too much. Configuration mode frequency minutes. So this is documented, by the way, but it has to be a multiple of refresh frequency minutes. If it's not a multiple, it will figure out what the nearest multiple is up. So is if a refresh frequency minutes is 30, and I'm configuring configuration mode frequency minutes to 50, it will automatically make that into 60. Something to keep in mind. If you're expecting the value 50 after 50 minutes, you're waiting. And you can't really expect why. In case you're configuring those in minutes, it's not a problem. But in our case, we configured it in 24 hours. And the other one is 48 hours. So that is quite a lot of waiting to test. Exporting commands. Has anybody had problems with exporting commands in DSC? Custom resources? Has anybody written a custom resource? Okay. When you create a custom resource, you have to tell the system within this resource, these are the things I want to export, or in other words, make available to the user, in this case, to the system. If you're not exporting it, the system has nothing. So you've got an empty DSC resource. Woohoo, you've got nothing. So with DSC resource, either use export module member at the end of the script and define what you want to export, or in the module manifest, you can configure commands to export star, asterisk, and you're done. That's the easy way. Using both, a waste of performance. Pick one, but not both. Does it also work? No. Oh boy. Every now and then my system video driver hangs. So I have to wait for it to fail, and then I can use it again. Sorry. This is taking too long. I'm rebooting my laptop. In the meantime, who is using DSC? Test, acceptation, production, anybody? Two people, three. So is this in test or also production? What are you DSCing? What are you using DSC to configure? The entire server or? Okay, and on that side, I saw another finger. No, I don't bite. Trust me. Okay, in that case, it's gonna boot. Who has never used PowerShell? Okay. Who uses Configuration Manager? System Center Configuration Manager. Okay. Just to clarify, System Center Configuration Manager has also a feature a little bit from functionality point of view similar to this, to DSC. It is called, anybody? Mm-hmm, management. System Center uses XML to configure it. And what it basically does is send all the information to the target, but also the packages already. So the packages are already on this on the target system. Then it starts comparing. DSC, on the other hand, only sends the basics first and let the client figure out what it needs. So the client requires access to packages if you want to deploy them. So this also means that the DSC server has very little load. The client does all the working. And my system has booted up. Yep. Is it working? Nope. Come on. And we're almost there. Making your life easier. When you create a DSC resource, you can use the DSC resource designer. It's a free script tool. It really makes it easier. You can use the script function called new MOF file. You can create it manually if you want to. I don't know if anybody has seen an MOF file from the inside, the content. It's not fun to type out. The syntax is a nightmare. So, what I always learned is get what you need, nothing else. So, when I first started using DSC, I'm doing import DSC resource and the name of the resource. Not the module, the resource. So, what DSC does is go into the system, check all the DSC resource modules, go into the manifests, and one by one it's checking, do you have the resource? No. Do you have the resource? No. All of those. That's quite a lot. So it would be more proper to do name. It's faster to do module. If you know the module name, import DSC resource module name my DSC resources. Yes, you're importing more than is required, but it's a heck of a lot faster. I've clocked it at a full system with all DSC resources currently available at 2 minutes, a little bit more than 2 minutes, just finding one resource. In this case, I needed 5. This is going to take a minute, or few. So, a resource design or a custom resource design, this is it. C program files, Windows PowerShell modules is the place where DSC modules are to be located. If you've got custom resources or composite resources, please place them here, not in System 32. Even vendors, not in System 32. The only one that's allowed to do that is Microsoft. Also, DSC has a resource name. If you there's no prefix in front of it, it's native from the system. If there's an X in front of it, it's experimental from a vendor. If there's a C in front of it, It's community module. So whenever you're creating a custom resource module, please put a C in front of it. Let's say this is the resource. This is PSM. The PSD file is where the actual script is. The PSM1 file, the schema.psm1 file, is where DSC figures out, hey, what's inside of this? How can I use it? This is one resource. Let's go one level up, the DSC module. I found this out the hard way, and it is also well documented, but as always, I didn't read the manual. The DSC module also needs a module file. So also a PSD1 file, not a schema.psd1, that's only for the resource. The PSD1 file can be empty. There's nothing needs to be in there. So I created an empty file, mydscresources.psd1. Next, I use PowerShell to create a module manifest. And all this module manifest has is the default output. So export everything, do nothing, because there's no content. It doesn't need to do anything. But DSC needs to be tricked into figuring out, hey, this is a PowerShell module, so I need to handle it, import it like a PowerShell module. Next, PowerShell takes looks inside, and hey, these are DSC resources, not PowerShell functions or commandlets. So then DSC kicks in and does its thing. So, additional resources. The links are in blue, so that's not readable. But reusing existing configuration scripts, that's from the PowerShell product team, or in other words, composite resources. When you're in large environments and you have standards defined, let's say all web servers need to have certain settings. You can define a composite resource, and you can import that composite resource once, and you don't need to copy paste the code all over again and again and again. So reusable code. Creating a composite DSC configuration with parameters. This was done by Robert Westerlund. Does anybody know Robert? I'm still looking for the guy. I only found his tweet account. But he has done some great work on DSC. Also on Stack Overflow. If you're into DSC, you may want to take a look at his blog. So there are a few other articles, especially the DSC ebook. Don Jones and Steven Morosky are working together with a few other community members to create an ebook free. That explains DSC and how you can use it. It approaches the technology from a technology point of view, not the business. So the word DevOps is used a few times, but it is not explained how you can implement this in an environment or whatever. This is purely technological. And of course, Steven Morosky, he is currently one of the PowerShell DSC stars. And his blog is very useful to follow, also if you're into DevOps. Are there about this any questions? Again, I don't bite. I've just eaten. Okay. So, what I'm building. eVision has hired me for one simple goal. Their current server infrastructure was built and maintained by the developers themselves. So installing a new virtual machine is loading an ISO file, next, etc. And they're frequent users of snapshots. We found that that was not desirable. The creating a new virtual machine in between the development work sometimes took more than a week. One virtual machine, that's it. So we're using DSC now to a trainer goes to Qatar to a customer, and he's like, okay, I want to provide a training to you. We've got 10 students. Okay, he logs onto a website. I've got this product I'm going to train. I've got 10 users. I want them to have a domain controller, a file server, a web server, etc. And yes, this and this and this needs to be highly available. He presses OK. Next morning, he gets in the office. He opens his email again, and he receives an email with, OK, your environment has been created. You can connect through this IP range. These are the usernames for the students. These are the passwords, etc. And this is done fully with no system center. I see somebody smile, but this took a lot of work. So that's step one. That's automation. A little bit of self-service even. But as I'm saying here, standardization is required first. If you can standardize, let's say, for example, your web servers, then you can automate. If you can automate, eventually you can work with the business, with the business processes, and do continuous delivery. That means that you've got a development, test, acceptation, and production environment. Development, test, acceptation. It's developed, it's approved, it automatically gets implemented in acceptation. Oh, sorry, in test. The same for acceptation, but not for production. That is a manual task for anybody, preferably me. If somebody screws it up, I want to be the one to do it. That's continuous delivery. Next step is continuous deployment. That's why you also take the production step and create it into an automatic task instead of manually. You have to be very sure that your testing has been done properly. Has anybody last half year installed Microsoft updates? I see somebody laugh, but I hear no yes. Come on. Yes or no? Yes, okay. So, if we were to deploy these updates into production, let's say in 2 weeks' time, I won't be happy. And that's why with updates we're using a different approach right now. We've got a delay of 1 month, just to be on the safe side, but that's because we had some problems with some previous updates. With our own product, updates for the product, we're implementing it throughout the environment. And then the fun thing comes. We're rebuilding the entire production environment 4 times a day. 8 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, 6 o'clock in the evening, 12 o'clock at night. Domain controllers, file servers, everything. Who can say that? So, key in this is logging, versioning. You want to be able to go back as soon as possible. If something goes wrong, first of all, your testing hasn't been done properly, so somebody needs to kick somebody's ass. And secondly, you want to be able to revert as soon as possible. So, snapshots is something we're not using anymore. No snapshots whatsoever. If something goes wrong, or you want to go to back to a previous state, redeploy the entire machine. Takes an hour, tops. And with continuous deployment, like I said, the testing becomes critical. So if something in the production goes wrong, something in testing has gone wrong. Who does the testing? Sysadmin? I don't think so. Users. So who is the cause? IT needs to fix it, as always, but the user is the cause. And we can prove it this time. So this is where you can use business processes to your advantage. They're there for a reason. You can use them. So it's all about business workflows and processes. If you can understand them and really take your time to understand them. Also, DevOps, like I said, understanding what the development company does. DevOps doesn't mean you're going to develop. Of course not. But you, it is about understanding what agile is, what a sprint is, what a Scrum Master is, stuff like that. Even Scrum Masters, that same technology, the same methodology, I've seen used in sysadmin groups. Each day, they're getting together for 15 minutes, 20 tops, and they're timing it, just to talk about what is currently today playing. What issues are there? Do you need help? And IT, I said that since I came from school, but IT is an enabling business factor, not a deciding. And because IT folk by nature are willing to help people, in the past that has been abused, I think. IT departments were always like, yeah, do it, and quick. And with this DevOps and automation, continuous delivery, self-service, we can say, you can deliver it yourself. Fill in the paperwork, digital paperwork. Yeah, that takes time. Can you do it? I can, yeah, but I don't. That's your job. So who has ever worked with a project leader that doesn't know how to plan? Only 5 people. Come on. No project leaders? Managers, even. Colleagues. Come on. So, a lack of planning on your part does not constitute an emergency on mine. That's a very famous phrase, but it's also true. And because IT people want to help others, they're like, okay, I can help you. I can fix it for you. So I believe I've got 6 minutes left. So, quickly to my virtual machine. Normally. Yep, there we are. Ooh, nice. So, what I've got here is, first I'm setting the location. Doesn't need to, but I'm lazy. This is the easy way. Okay. This is my configuration data. So, with configuration data, you've got one given. That's all nodes. For all nodes, I define these are my nodes. So node name is web01, role is web, environment production, roles to be present, in other words, Windows roles to be present. Use the display name over there. So web server. This way I've defined 4 servers, 3 web servers, 1 domain controller. And as you can see, all 3 servers are in production. Web03 is in the test environment. So remember that one. I've got my configuration here. I give it a name. Node. All nodes. First of all, I'm saying, well, if a reboot is required, do it. Remember that? And there we go again. Node. All nodes dot node name. That's the property I defined in the config data before. And what I'm saying there, well, normally I would say for each node in all nodes, do this. With design state configuration, it automatically figures it out. Well, hey, you're saying node, this. This is an array object. So for each node in nodes, that's what you want. So inside the node block, all nodes block, the node variable is automatically available. That means that all the properties I defined earlier, I can use. So if node environment not equals production, so test, that's Web03. Ensure the Telnet client is present and a certain file is available. Next, switch. I've got either a web server or an Active Directory server. So switch for node.row. If the role equals a web server, do this. If it equals Active Directory, do that. You can do the same with any object, any property in the all nodes config data. So I could also do it for something with the name. If there's an S in the name, do this. And this is a normal PowerShell switch. So you can use regex, you can use variables, you can use anything. It's a nice PowerShell-y look and feel. So after that, I'm saying my config data, my config has configuration data. That's the variable I defined up earlier. And the output path is, well, path/staging. And if I look at path/staging, it's empty. I execute it. It has created 4 MOF files, and system.collection.hashtable.meta.mof. So when I look at the size of these, Web03 is bigger. That's because it has extra tasks. Like I defined here, if the environment not equals production, well, this not equals production. This is test. So open with, yep. Open, also yep. Good morning. You can see a big difference in here. And I'm not executing it right now. This is an easy way for people to compare. You can see an MOF file. If, in theory, your MOF files need to be from the same size, and they differ, something in your configuration has gone wrong. So if you approach it this way, there's no need for you to deploy it to clients and start comparing those clients anymore. It's text-based. Are there any questions about this? In that case, I still got like 10 minutes, right? I'm going too fast. Okay. So, session feedback. If you want to sign my death warrant, you can do it here. overall conference feedback, with the exception of the room is cold, because they're working on that. That's also very welcome. And of course, we want to thank our sponsors. They're paying for the drinks. And this, I don't know why this is here. This is from the template. I'm not Marcel, by the way. So that was my session. If there are any questions, please feel free to ask them. And I hope you enjoyed it.